Welcome, sports fans, to the hottest sports podcast in the game, JT and the Don, with your hosts, Jimmy Thompson and Donato Bucci. They're covering the most current issues in sports from the 305 to the 412 and all the way to the West Coast. You can follow them on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at JT and the Don, or email them at jtandthedon@gmail.com. Now take it away, guys.
All right, welcome to a special episode of JT and the Don. It is our NFL free agency and NCAA tournament prediction special. I'm super excited about this episode in particular.
Yeah, man. Whoa, hold on, Tom. When did we get specials? I didn't know we were there.
I didn't even introduce you yet, JT. Jeez, jumping the gun.
You know me. I don't care. I just jumped right in.
We got special episodes starting now, okay? All right with you? You signed off on it with the production team. Anyway, that's our amazing co-host JT in the house. How's it going? I'm good. You know, I'm great because it's a great time of the year in sports, because especially in the Northeast. I should preface that, in the Northeast, because the weather's getting warmer. We've got the NCAA tournament going on.
Oh, it's actually 30 degrees now, so you can kind of go outside a little bit.
No. It's above 30, which is the freezing mark's main thing. We got baseball about to happen, the NFL draft in a month, but today let's talk a little bit about free agency that occurred.
You know, I'm not with all this, you know, proper stuff. So let's just get right to it, man. Let's talk about the real reason why people came here. They want to talk about football. And I don't want to spend too much time on this because I'm so sick of the Steelers. I'm so sick of talking about them. So let's get right to it. I know you're a Steelers homer, so I know you got some opinions on this. So the Raiders basically just robbed the Steelers. Antonio Brown got traded for a third and fifth round pick. I want to know, for you, was this a good move by the Raiders? And also, did the Steelers lose in this deal?
It was a good move by the Raiders, at least for now. We'll see in 2 years once the guaranteed money is gone.
Y'all got robbed.
But for the Steelers in particular, I do believe they lost the deal far and away. And one of the reasons is because they held all the power, I thought, in this negotiating, or basically held all the cards, because Antonio Brown was not a free agent, nor was he in the last year of his contract. He still had 3 years left, $39 million. And I know what you're going to say. There was no guaranteed money. That is true, but he was still under contract.
Damn, why you taking my thunder? You know he had no guaranteed money.
Because I'm sick of talking about all this guaranteed money stuff. But they, meaning the Steelers, could have held out, or just because, worst case, they turn around and say, hey, you have to play, show up and report if you want to get paid. And if he doesn't show up, guess what? They don't need to pay him. Or worst case, you're already going to take a dead cap hit by trading him of $21.12 million. So why not then just say, hey, we're going to pay you. You're going to stay on the roster. We're going to deactivate you every game, make you inactive, and you stay at home away from the team.
But hold on. I don't want to interrupt you, but I want to throw this out here. You tell me if I'm right or wrong. How much of this is that the Steelers as an organization just sort of lost all the leverage in the situation, because the guys sat out for the last game of the season, which essentially, if they would have won, would have put them in the playoffs. He's like, you know what? Forget y'all. I'm not getting no guaranteed money. I want a new deal. I'm not going to show up. Like, how do you negotiate with a guy who's willing to sit out important games that actually matter? I feel like that's a brilliant move by him. It basically got him the money that he was looking for. You can't negotiate with that guy. If I'm not showing up for a playoff game, then there's nothing you can do to me to punish me.
Well, AB did play it great. You're right. And him and Rosenhaus played it great. But
hey, man, you know we don't talk about Drew Rosenhaus on
this
show.
I'm sorry. But again, the Steelers, I think AB acted like this because he knew the Steelers would fold one way or another. Either, hey, they're going to cut me outright, or they're going to trade me to where I want to go. He did not have a no-trade clause, so they could have traded him to anyone. And the fact here, you bring up a great point, like, hey, did he seize their deal? Well, not really, because in the end, it seemed like it was very easy for the Raiders to sign him to a three-year deal worth up to $54 million in incentives. 3 years, $50 million, up to $54 in incentives. $30 million of it guaranteed. It seemed like they worked that out pretty quick. So that should have made his trade value even more in that sense. And they got away with only a third and fifth round pick. His salary.
But you know what's funny? I hate to cut you off, but you actually make a good point. I want to go back to the whole Drew Rosenhaus thing. This is so funny that Drew Rosenhaus is the agent of this. Tell me if I'm wrong, but this sounds eerily similar to the whole Terrell Owens deal when he went from the Niners to the Eagles and he balled out and he wanted this like brand new ball and contract from the Eagles and they wouldn't give it to him. And you remember that summer when like everybody wanted to get a six pack when he was doing the sit-ups in the driveway? Like he showed out, acted a fool, and they were like, "All right, dude, we can't deal with you anymore." So they traded him to Dallas, and then he ended up getting the contract that he wanted. And Drew Rosenhaus, of course, was the agent. I think this is just Drew Rosenhaus' way of covering himself as an agent, because I think he did AB a disservice on his first go around by having the Steelers extend him and making the guaranteed money so front loaded. And I think he did the same thing with T.O. So I think this is Drew Rosenhaus getting his client out of a bad spot.
Yeah, the infamous sit ups in the driveway. But I think you're right, because AB was on a team friendly deal the last couple years. Two other really quick points on this, why the Steelers lost on the deal. If you're telling me they only got a third and a fifth round pick, where did the negotiation start? As I was telling you before when we got on the air, hey, if it started at a six or seven,
can you just admit y'all got hustled?
No, we did it. We did.
Y'all got hustled, man.
We did. Y'all got hustled. We did it. But
they stole the gold chain, man. They hustled y'all.
The Steelers should have pushed for at least a second at that point. Once the Raiders were at a third.
No, this is like Tlaib snatching the chain off your neck, man.
No, they would have made the deal. The Raiders still would have made the deal. Maybe a first rounder, but at least a second. And then my last point is why you didn't need to make the deal. You saw he only got $30 million in guaranteed. And I say, oh, but, you know, let's face it, one of the best receivers in the game only getting $30 million guaranteed. After the second year with the Raiders, he basically has no more guaranteed money. So worst case, we know AB was all about the money to make him happy. Give him $35 million in guaranteed money. I bet you he would have been able to work things out with Big Ben.
Man, you know what? I'm really sick and tired of talking about AB. So I'm not even going to get into it. Yes, it was a bad deal for y'all. Yes, John Gruden is a genius. Y'all got fleeced. I just want to bring up something else that really kind of stood out to me in this whole situation. It's that I think that the whole AB situation, and also I'm going to throw in Odell Beckham Jr. Obviously, we'll get to him in a little bit. But I just think this is an overall bad look for NFL management, the owners, everyone, because you're sending a message that it's not good enough to be a baller and the best player on the team, which AB, let's all agree that he is, but also he's regarded as the hardest worker in the building. Like, that's the one thing everybody says is that, oh, AB's talented, he's the hardest worker. Same thing with Odell Beckham, best player, hardest worker. Since when is that not good enough to keep your job? Like, I don't understand. I don't understand that thought process. Like, when do we get to the point where management has to like you in sports? That's not a winning mentality. Like, I don't give a damn. Like, most athletes are jerks. Like, I don't give a damn if he's an asshole. If he can come in, ball out, work hard, and win us games, that's all that matters. Like, I think that's a losing mentality by management, and I think that's why a lot of NFL teams have problems, is that everybody wants to be friends. Who cares? Like, I want those guys that come in and help us win games. And, like, I remember, side note from this, I remember growing up, my mom used to always tell me this, and clearly I failed at using her advice because I'm on this show with you, but she used to always tell me that, Jimmy, it's not about who works the hardest and who's the most talented on the job. What really matters is if your boss likes you. And I always used to look at her sideways like, well, that doesn't make any sense. And as I got older, I realized exactly what she was talking about. Everybody wants to work with people they like. And in business, that could be okay. But in sports, no, because me liking you doesn't translate to wins. And it's like, you're sending the wrong message too, because the people who aren't regarded as hard workers get the most pass. Let's look at people on the Steelers. His own teammates, Ben Roethlisberger. Has Ben Roethlisberger ever been confused as a hard worker? Hell no. Eli Manning for the Giants, ever been confused as a hard worker? Hell no. But they get all the breaks in the book. I just think it's a bad look by management, and I'm done. I'm so sick of talking about AB and the Steelers.
Well, that's some great advice by your mom. That's real life stuff here. And that was a low blow that you took there with saying that you haven't followed her advice because you're on the show with me. That hurt a little bit. But to just to just wrap up the AB situation here and to get back to what you were saying, sometimes, though, it's important that the players get along in the locker room, man. I mean, just like in a real work environment, if there's a lot of friction, makes people uncomfortable, and that's not optimal for the work environment. People are not going to produce at their top level, and sometimes that happens here. And, you know, listen, about working hard, no one would ever question that with AB, but Eli and Ben have two Super Bowl rings. Antonio Brown does not. And listen, you mentioned someone else, OBJ. He doesn't have any either. And I want to talk about him now. He was traded as well. A huge blockbuster deal in terms of star player like OBJ. Moved from the Giants to the Cleveland Browns. In return, the Giants got a first round pick in this year's draft, a fifth round pick in this year's draft, and Jabril Peppers. Excuse me. So, Jates, you know who from Michigan, the defenseman from Michigan. You forgot about him? The Browns took him in like the first round last year.
Oh, my bad. I forgot he was still in the league.
So, was it a good move by the Giants trading him? Did they get enough for him? And what are the Giants doing? Are they rebuilding? What is the Giants' plan?
Well, first of all, the answer to your question is, hell no, that wasn't a good deal. Man, what the hell are the Giants doing? This makes absolutely no sense. Damn. I think I finally found a team that might have worse management than the Dolphins. Like, this makes no sense. First of all, let's just break it down step by step. So, obviously, it's a bad move. Anytime you get rid of your best player, it's always a bad move. But this is what I don't understand. They just paid him this huge contract. I just don't get that. You paid him the huge contract, and why would you trade him now? And you know me, I'm not good with numbers. How much will his cap hit this year now they got rid of him?
So the cap hit for the Giants, what's called dead cap, is $16
million. Damn! For that much, they could have kept him. I don't understand this. So this is what's confusing to me about the whole Giants situation. So let's go back to last year's draft. They were high up number 2. They didn't take a quarterback. Instead, they took Saquon Barkley, which is cool with me. Barkley turned out to be a baller. He seems like a generational talent at running back. All right, I'm cool with that. You took the best player in your eyes that was available. But by taking Barkley last year, you created the narrative amongst your fan base that, look, we have Barkley. He turned out to be this great player. We have OBJ. Everybody already knows he's one of the top playmakers in the league. So you're essentially sending the message that we're really just a quarterback away from being the Giants and being competitive and being in the playoffs again. So I don't understand that. So if you do that, why the hell would you get rid of Odell Beckham after signing him to this big deal? So, like, are they in a rebuild? Because based on last year, I had no idea that the Giants were in the process of rebuilding. So I don't understand why you don't hang on to Beckham. Obviously, you got Saquon on a rookie deal. You have your star receiver already locked up. Just take a quarterback this year. There's quarterbacks in this draft that could make the Giants good. And I don't understand why everybody's just skating around the real issue. One, let's just get it out the way. Eli's washed. He sucks. He's terrible. I don't understand why he's even still playing. Donato, you know I'm bad with numbers. How much would it have cost them if they were to cut Eli?
So you're saying this year?
Yes.
Well, going into this year, if they had cut him, it would have been a cap hit of dead cap again, $6.2 million. Now that they've elected that they're going to keep him and pay him, he's going to be a kit of $23.2 million, and obviously now they have to pay him that $23 million.
So, you know, man, I don't got that fancy University of Miami education like some people, but are you telling me that it would have cost more money to keep Eli than cut Odell?
Yes, because in the dead cap with OBJ is $16
million. That doesn't make any sense. That makes no sense. And hold on, time out. Also, too, how much would it have been to tag Landon Collins?
Landon Collins would have been about $11.5 million. And remember, that's a franchise tag, so it's only 1 year.
So they let one of the best safeties in the game go when they could have just tagged him. All these moves cost less than keeping Eli sorry ass on the roster for another year when it's guaranteed they're going to lose. So, like, why would you go draft the quarterback in the draft now, in this year's draft? It makes no sense. How is that going to improve your team? You already got rid of the receiver. Like, so who are you going to take? You're going to take, like, Quinnen Williams? Like, how is that going to help you win games? So I just don't understand what the Giants are doing. So it just brings me to my real point of what's the whole root of the major root of this whole issue is the general manager, Dave Gettleman, is a train wreck. Like, he is terrible. Like, he's like, for those who don't know, Gettleman is the GM of the Giants, and he also was a general manager for the Carolina Panthers once upon a time. And I'm just going to go through some of the stuff that he's done with the Giants that have kind of essentially sabotaged them. And it's eerily similar to the same stuff that he pulled in Carolina that made him a train wreck. So first of all, I feel like in Carolina, his claim to fame was, one, he was a terrible drafter. Two, he was the guy who gave out terrible contracts to terrible players. And three, he never got along with people who were star players on the team, whether it be in production and in personality. So let's just look at some of the bad things that he's done for the Giants so far. One, like I said, he's terrible at free agent signings. He signed Brandon Marshall, washed. This Nate Solder, which is the left tackle from the Patriots they gave that big contract to last offseason. I'm not saying he's trash, but obviously he ain't that good because the Giants' O-line still sucks. And he signed Jonathan Stewart from the Panthers, running back. Donato, you can look up his stats. I don't even know if the dude played. And let's look at the moves that he made in Carolina. And this is why I'm telling you that he's the real issue. One, you remember Josh Norman when he played for the Panthers, the cornerback? Donato, would you agree with me that Josh Norman, when he played with Carolina, was one of the best DBs in the game?
Yes, I would agree with that.
All right, so this idiot rescinded his franchise tag offer a week before the NFL draft. The guy, they let him test free agency. He's like, you know what? I'd rather come back and play with you on the franchise tag. He better be glad Le'Veon Bell wasn't in that situation, because Le'Veon Bell would be like, look, I'm out. He rescinded the tag to one of their best defensive players. Norman basically made their defense elite and stand out. Okay, so you let that guy go. Another thing that he did, he botched the relationship with two of Carolina's biggest players in the history of their franchise on the way out. Wide receiver Steve Smith and running back D'Angelo Williams. As a matter of fact, this is so funny. D'Angelo Williams, when Dave Gettleman got the job as the GM for the New York Giants, went on and said this, and I quote, "He's your problem now. That's exactly what I tell them, the Giants. For the vet players that are there now, be very cautious. Once he gets his guys in there, then he develops that relationship with them and not developing a relationship with the guys that are already there because he doesn't know them." Damn, that sounds like exactly what's going on in New York. They've shipped out all the personalities and the star players that are bigger than the GM. OBJ gone, Olivier Vernon gone. All these guys who were great on that team are gone. And then he uses bad drafting tactics. Devin Funchess, wide receiver for the Carolina Panthers, not anymore. Trash. They used a second, a third, and a fifth to get this player, and he has been terrible. Also, in Carolina, the king of giving out bad deals. He gave out a deal to Matt Khalil, left tackle in 2017. He gave him a 5-year, $55 million contract. In Carolina, Matt Khalil was already one of the worst tackles in football when he played for Minnesota. Plus, he had the injury prone tag. Michael Orr, you know who he is. Yeah, okay, the blind side was a long time ago. He's terrible. They gave him a big contract. And on top of that, they already had a left tackle in the past, Jordan Gross, who in my opinion will probably be a Hall of Famer when it's all said and done. Arguably the best player in Carolina Panthers history. They let him retire instead of working out a new deal to have him continue playing. And he was still playing at a high level. And then my final point is, he's a terrible drafter. Just look at some of the busts that he's drafted very high in Carolina. Already mentioned Funchess, who is trash. Kelvin Benjamin, next, trash. Vernon Butler, I don't even know who that guy is. I think he's still on the team. Coney Ealy has been cut like 10 times since he's been in the NFL. I don't even know how to say his name. B'nai B'Wickery, high second round pick. I don't even know if he's in the league. Shaq Thompson, linebacker trash. I'll give him credit that he somehow, you know, lucked up and chose Christian McCaffrey. But other than that, he's been a train wreck. It's obvious that Dave Gettleman is the real issue with the Giants. He's the problem with OBJ. Thank God Pat Shurmur talked Gettleman into at least giving Odell Beckham the deal in the first place. Shurmur wanted to say, look, let's work it out. Let's see if he can play with me this 1 year. Let's see if I can get him under control. And Gettleman's like, nah, he got to go. This is just terrible. This is terrible management by the Giants. I don't understand how dudes like this have a job. I ain't going to take up too much more time. My rant's over, man. You can say whatever you want.
Wow, what a rant. Can I speak now? All right, well, I'm gonna speak now. So, no, you definitely did your homework there, all right? That was great research you did going back, looking up all those deals. I can't defend Dave Gettleman and those deals that he made with Carolina. I cannot defend him for passing on
you know you're going to try to defend him. You always down with management. You so cool.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not. That's not true at all. And I can't defend him like I was going to say with passing on quarterback in particular, Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen. And I can't defend them on Eli. I mean, you just went over the numbers and his skills at this point, his production does not match the cap hit, right? Nor his salary. So I thought Ben McAdoo did the right thing in benching Eli a couple seasons ago, and they should have kept him on the bench. Now
they were so mad.
I know the.
I don't know if they were mad at the fact that they broke Eli's streak or that they broke his streak for Geno Smith. I think Geno Smith had a lot to do with people being
pissed off about that. Maybe. I'm not saying Geno Smith was the future. Definitely was not Eli. So, but with all of that said, he is the GM and he's allowed to change his plan. So I think originally when he took over the team a year ago, he came in thinking, hey, we have a playoff potential team. I think Eli can get it done, meaning Dave Gettleman's mindset. I think Eli can get it done, especially with OBJ, Evan Ingram, and if we can get him a Le'Veon Bell type of guy like a Saquon Barkley. And that's what he really thought. And about halfway through the season, and again, they did sign OBJ to the extension. Maybe, like you said, it was more Pat Shurmur than anything. But nevertheless, they did it. So here, halfway through the season, they're not where they thought they would be. And he's like, whoa, I was wrong. We got to change the script, right? Because kept going down this same path, they would be, you know, in years in the exact same situation. So he thought that, hey, we need to do something. We're a little bit further away than I thought. And I think what they're playing now is, hey, let's play this season out. Hope not that we're going to tank it, but hopefully we don't do that well. And in 2020, remember, now 2019, they'll have 2 first-round picks. I don't think they take a quarterback. I think they build the defense, maybe get another offensive piece. But in 2020, if they can be in the top 5 drafting, remember, 2 quarterbacks, Justin Herbert of Oregon and Tua Tagovailoa of Alabama. So those are 2 guys they may want. And the reason why they did this.
Are you sure that's how you really say his name? Because you ain't sound so confident when you say
how do
that.
You say it?
I don't know. I'm not the one on the show trying to pronounce his name. I would just say Tua. That's his name.
I got it right.
David
I'm not going to say his last name again. So
yeah, spell check that.
So, and the reason why he did this deal, he felt it improved their team. And this is a direct quote from what he said in his conference, in his press conference. In order for us to move Odell, their team was going to have to knock it out of the park. For us to get Jabril Peppers, he's going to be a very good safety in this league. He's young. We've got him under contract for 3 years at very reasonable. Another thing he said, to get another one, meaning first round pick, this year is number 17. And to get that kind of a value in this type of draft and to get a third round pick, completing our dance card for April, it was just too much to pass up. It was too much value for us. And I do apologize. I think I had said earlier it was a first and a fifth. I was getting the fifth confused with Antonio Brown and the Steelers.
Well, you know what? You make a good point. And I'm going to say this. First of all, Odell Beckham's an all-time generational talent. So whatever sorry player they're going to get at with that first round pick, in the third round pick, and Jabril Peppers ain't going to make up for what Odell Beckham can do. First of all, that's just point blank. So I'm not even going to argue with you about that. But you did say something that kind of, you know, persuaded me to go the other way a little bit. And this would probably be the only instance where I can see this not being a great move from a value standpoint, but being a great move from maybe they do have some sort of plan now. So if indeed the Giants, you know, are officially tanking and this is an orchestrated plan, I can see them trying to get rid of Odell Beckham because you will admit Odell Beckham, he's super talented. He's a hard worker. He's very, very competitive. Like, I can see Odell Beckham balling out on a team where, like, we're losing every game and he's just going to try to give it us all to help us win. Like, I think that's a bad fit with management is clearly trying to lose games and Odell Beckham's out here working his ass off trying to win games. So it's kind of like y'all pulling in a different direction. And, like, I would hate for the Giants to have, like, the number one pick locked up at the end of the season. And Odell Beckham's like, you know what, I'm tired of losing. And he goes off for, like, some crazy game, like, throws, like, an 80-yard touchdown pass. It takes him out of the running for the first overall pick. So if that's the case, I can kind of see why they would get rid of him. Because you just paid this guy all this money. He doesn't want to lose.
You bring up a great point there. And it kind of flows into one of my other reasons of maybe why they got rid of him. Because his 5-year deal worth $90 million, 40 of it guaranteed at signing, 65 guaranteed ball was not takes effect technically this year because he was still on his rookie fifth year option last year. They restructured some of the money.
Hey, whoa, run that back. How much they paid him at signing?
$40 million.
They just gave him a $40 million check.
I don't know exactly how they structured that part of it.
Damn, I want to be Odell Beckham. Give me $40 million and tell me.
I don't know if it was all one check. I don't know if it hits the bank account the same day. But in 2022 and 2023, no guaranteed money in that deal. So guess what? The Giants just saw what happened with Antonio Brown and the Steelers when the last 2 years of the deal had no guaranteed money.
Very similar.
They don't want to have to deal with that problem in 3 years. So they felt, hey, the value is too good to pass up. Let's trade them. And then my last point, and I know you're not going to like this, but, and I know you don't like this term, but name me the last time in the Super Bowl era that a team with a diva receiver like an OBJ or an AB won a Super Bowl. Were you even born then? I don't know.
Well, damn, if we gonna go out like that, tell me the last time a team won a Super Bowl with a sorry quarterback like Eli Manning.
Do you really want to go there? I mean, Peyton Manning was on tag in Super Bowl 50, bro.
Nah, he wasn't as sorry as Eli is.
True, but neither did Peyton Manning.
Exactly.
Peyton Manning.
You know how much I hate that term, diva receiver.
But
I feel like that's a manufactured media term, man. Like there's divas at every position. Ben Roethlisberger is a quarterback. He's a damn diva. There's diva D-backs, defensive backs. There's diva defensive linemen. There's diva linebackers. There's diva running backs. They're athletes. Everybody's a damn diva. So I hate just because the receivers have personalities. Oh, we can win without them. Like Odell Beckham. Should get half.
But these are facts.
For every
these are,
year that he's been no. The these league. He's kept Eli.
These are facts. Go look at the Super Bowl history. You just talked. Let's go back. You said when's the last time Ben, a quarterback like Ben has won a Super Bowl? He's got two Super Bowls.
No,
and guess
that's not
what
I
every
said.
Position,
there
yes,
you go,
every
there you go
no,
trying to lie
every
to make
position.
Your I said, when's the last time a sorry quarterback just won a Super Bowl?
But that wasn't my point. My point is a diva receiver. And you said every position has divas. Yes, the difference is those other positions with diva players, a diva cornerback, a diva quarterback, a diva running back, they've won Super Bowls. That's what I'm saying. Let's move on here from OBJ. All right, I'm sure we'll talk about him more.
What are we going to do, talk about another Steelers
Absolutely.
Player? I know that's the only time you move on to talk about the Steelers.
Absolutely. I want to talk about, it's a former Steeler now, Le'Veon Bell. I want to talk about his free agent sign. go ahead, laugh. He signed with the New York Jets. The deal was a four-year deal worth $52.5 million. It's being reported that it could max out at $61 million, and $25 million of it is fully guaranteed. JT, my question to you: did Le'Veon Bell do the right thing last season in sitting out the whole 2018 season?
Damn, that's a tough question. For me, all honesty, it depends on how you look at it. If he sat out for the money, hell no, he got played. So he lost whatever, how much he was going to make on the franchise tag last year if he would have played. My numbers guy.
$14.5 million. Do your own research.
So, sorry, that's what I got you for. So he's never going to get that $14 million back. That's gone. But if he did it for health reasons, like, hey, I don't want to get these additional 400 touches on my body, then, yeah, he did win in that respect. But, honestly, I don't think it's his fault that he ended up getting the contract that he received. If you want to blame somebody, you should really blame Todd Gurley, because the Rams gave him that big deal last season, and then what happened? Exactly what everybody thinks is going to happen to running backs. Gurley got hurt at the end of the year when it mattered most. They went to the Super Bowl despite him really not playing. And they signed some fat dude off the street who basically put up the same numbers and took him to the Super Bowl. So just proving the point to NFL owners, they already thought, running backs are invaluable. We don't have to pay them. So I think the fact that Todd Gurley got hurt last year and the Rams still didn't miss a beat on offense, that set back a lot of running backs. Not just Bell, but a lot of upcoming negotiations. So Zeke and all those dudes. Yo, you guys aren't going to get the money that you thought you were, and you guys should all go to Todd Gurley's house and tell him y'all feel some type of way about it. But I feel the only reason that Bell truly got this deal with the Jets is New York just had to, the Jets had to make a splash in free agency, And because of who Bell is, and everybody knew the story was out there that, oh, everything was about money. That was the reason he sat out. That was the reason he wanted out of Pittsburgh. They couldn't come and offer him a half-ass deal and him actually, you know, take the deal and want to show up way below market value. And they couldn't, you can't expect him to come into the Jets and work hard and want to play for a team that he knows he's probably going to go to and lose. So I feel like the fact that the Jets offered him was probably the best thing for him, and he's lucky to have gotten the money that he got.
Well, you mentioned if it was for money or if it was, you know, for his health. This was clearly, okay, Le'Veon did this for the money part, all right? Now, an extra benefit of him sitting out last year was his health, body could heal and relax, so and recover. So this was clearly about money. So let me just put it all out on the table. Again, 4 years, $52.5 million by the Jets. In comparison, the Steelers, 5 years, $70 million. Now, part of the $70 million was going to be the $14.5 franchise tag, which they would have kind of structured a certain way his future. But nevertheless, it was still going to be $70 million. For him to have recouped the $15.5 million that he missed out on, for him to justify sitting out, his contract with the Jets would have needed to have been 4 years, $72 million. Or even 4 years, $70 million, but more so 4 years, $72 million. All right, because after the franchise tag year, his Steeler contract would have then been basically about 4 years, $55 million. So you see, he's still $3 million short on that four-year deal with the Jets. And not only that, he's $20 million short because he doesn't come up to the $70 million. And he needed to have recouped the $14.5 million. So right there,
man, he was just lucky to get the money he got.
He's right there. He's behind. Now, let's go to the fully guaranteed money. $25 million by the Jets. No guaranteed money in it with the Jets after the first 2 years. No injury guarantees in 2020 or 2021. Now, the Steelers, in comparison, his first year would have been really the only guaranteed one, which would have been $20.5 million. But his cash flow, meaning what he would have gotten through the first 2 years, would have been $33 million. The Steelers are not going to cut him at year one unless it's like a catastrophic injury. But we see the Steelers are still paying Ryan Shazier. Saw how bad of an injury he had.
Let's just call it what it is, man. Le'Veon Bell needed the money. He spent the whole year partying in Miami. Trust me, he broke. He broke and he fat, so he need the money.
I don't know about all that, but the question is, did he do sitting out? No, because he got less money overall and less money basically guaranteed for 2 years. I'm done.
All right. Thank you. I'm glad you're done. I'm so tired of talking about these Steelers players, man. So let's get to the rest of the NFL because I think that's much more interesting than talking about y'all. So I want to ask you, you know, a few things about, you know, some of the deals that obviously went down, the other guys that got paid. So let's go through some of these. In your opinion, what was the best signing in free agency that was made by a team? So who do you got?
I'm going to go with the Chicago Bears signing safety HaHa Clinton Dix to a one-year deal for...
You don't even know his real name, do you?
Nope. What?
I asked you the question.
See, don't put me on blast when you don't even know the answer. When I did that to you, I know...
Isn't it Hassan? Hassan Clinton Dix?
You're answering a question with a question.
I think it is.
Okay. All right. So HaHa Clinton Dix, that's how we all know him. One-year deal, $3.5 million. Dollars with the Bears. Great deal for the Bears. It's only a one-year deal, paying him very minimal amount of money for a young safety who's a potential Pro Bowl player, and everyone has high expectations for him. He's going to replace Adrian Amos, who was more of a box safety. Clinton Dix, more of that safety that can play the pass defense much better than Amos. And along with Eddie Jackson now, that's a great tandem as far as safeties go. And, you know, Clinton Dix, I think, is a great ball hawk. So that's my pick.
I like that one. I'm going to go with the 49ers trading for linebacker D4 from the Chiefs. All they had to do was give up a 2020 second round pick. I think that's nothing for a guy who's considered one of the best pass rushers in the league. He fits into the 3-4 defense. The 49ers need pass rushers. I think that was an excellent move by them. And that also frees them up to take the best player available in the draft this year. So I think that's the best move by a team. Can't beat that.
So, JT, then what would signing by an individual player?
Oh, so you mean which player did the best job of hustling the NFL franchise?
You love tonight, don't you?
That's all it is. It's a hustle, man.
We got Rick Ross. Where's Rick Ross?
This is easy, too. This is easy, too, man. My man Nick Foles went to the bank. 4 years, $88 million deal. $50 million guaranteed. Nick Foles. This dude didn't even want to play football a couple years ago. You want to talk about making the best of most of your opportunities? This man turned literally three games into $50 million. I mean, that's the best. That's talk about striking while the iron's hot. And hold up, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I just want to put these numbers out there. I was reading about this, so they compared Blake Bortles in his 5 years with the Jaguars to Nick Foles' numbers playing for any other team but the Eagles. So in yards per start, Blake Bortles is better. In touchdown rate, Blake Bortles is better. Their interception rate is about the same. Blake Bortles averaged more yards per pass, and his quarterback rating was much higher. So the Jaguars just basically paid for a worse version of Blake Bortles. So hell yeah, that's the best deal, man. Nick Foles, man, get your money.
Good old Saint Nick does it again. I've got two Devin Funchess to the Colts, 1 year, $10 million, $3 million guaranteed after what you just criticized him on. I'm like, how did he get that sort of deal? Even though I'm a Devin Funchess fan. And then.
Yeah, and it reflects on your fantasy team.
Hey, back-to-back champs at one point in your league.
He didn't make the playoffs, though.
It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Cam Wake. Now, this wasn't a hustle job, okay? I'm just giving him props. Being a 37-year-old D lineman, having played many years in this league at a high level, he comes through with the contract. This Titans, 3 years, $23 million, $10 million guaranteed. Way to go, Wake. Way to go, Cam.
I could go with that. All right, so what was your choice for the worst move by a team?
Mine was the Jets for C.J. Mosley, the linebacker from the Ravens. They gave him a 5-year
deal. Yeah, man, you could tell you love the Steelers. You hate everything the Ravens do. The dude don't even play for them anymore, man. Why can't you be happy for him?
I speak with my mind, not with my heart. C.J. Mosley, 5 years, $85 million, 51 of it guaranteed. Now, they're going to be paying an average of $17 million a year at a position which the closest annual average contract is now Quan Alexander, $13.5 million. They went $4 million above. And, you know, Mosley also is going to a 4-3 where he was playing in a 3-4. Now, with the 4-3, they're going to have to move over Avery Williamson, the Jets are, to outside linebacker, which is not his natural position. So I'm a little worried about the linebacker spots too for the Jets.
All right, I can get with that. I actually had a couple deals that were bad moves by teams. One, first of all, anybody that plays on the Dolphins that you go after in free agency to me is a bad move. So obviously the offensive tackle Juwan James, who at one point the Dolphins were like, we're gonna bench you and make you a healthy scratch for the remainder of the season. So just to let you know how bad he played. Oh, yeah, the Broncos and John Elway just handed him a 4-year, $51 million contract. Enough said. Also, the outside linebacker, Ladarius Smith from the Ravens, the Packers signed him to a 4-year, $66 million contract. To me, I thought he was more of a 1-year wonder. He did have 8.5 sacks last year, but he really didn't do anything in the previous season, so I think that's a lot of money to invest in someone who's not really proven anything. And then my third one is Trey Flowers, the defensive end for the Lions, formerly of the Patriots. $90 million over 5 seasons. $40 million guaranteed. Damn, I need to be an agent. These people getting paid. That made him the highest paid edge rusher behind only Khalil Mack and Von Miller. So everybody knows that, you know, when guys leave New England, they basically disappear from the league and never pan out. So you got a guy from the Patriots that you're paying all this money, which he's probably guaranteed to bust. And then he's also playing for a coach that used to coach for the Patriots, and they are also guaranteed to bust. Oh, yeah, and by the way, Matt Patricia is also terrible as a coach, too. So that's a horrible move. So those are my three worst moves by teams.
We're only supposed to pick one. I mean, you're cheating the system by picking three.
But it's three trash deals, so sue me.
All right, so worst move by an individual player. I'm going to go first here, JT, because we've spoken about it already.
You better not bring up a Steelers
player. Le'Veon Bell for not a year ago not accepting the 5-year deal worth $70 million from the Steelers. Enough said.
All right, I can go with that. I'm actually going to go a different direction. I'm going to go with linebacker Anthony Barr for the Vikings. So check this. He actually had a really big deal set up with the New York Jets. And at the last minute, he spurned them to make less money to go back to the Vikings. Now, this is why I think it's a bad deal. One, if you're taking less money, that's always a bad deal in free agency. But also, the Jets had it all set up for him to be like their star pass rusher. The defense was going to be around him getting to the quarterback, which is his strength. He turned more money down in that opportunity to go back to the Vikings where they have him playing out of position. Like, they got him playing in space and coverage. Like, you remember that game on national television last year where they played the Rams? Yeah, you probably saw Anthony Barr, the back of his damn jersey. He was getting roasted all game. He gave up 3 touchdowns in that game trying to cover receivers. You want to take less money to return to that situation? Terrible move. I don't get it.
He has a better chance of winning there. That's why he's doing it.
Yeah, he also got a better chance of ending up on Come On Man and getting roasted. Anyway, I'm going to end up with what's the most underrated signing by a team. So I'm going to go with the running back, Tevin Coleman. The 49ers signed him. He's formerly with the Atlanta Falcons. I think he did a good job. They only signed him to a 2-year, $8.5 million deal. But when you break it down, it's really just a 1-year deal with a team option after next season. I think it's a great move for him because he gets the team back up with Kyle Shanahan, who was obviously his offensive coordinator and play caller with the Falcons when he did have success. Obviously, Shanahan left. It's gone in the tank. So that's probably why he had to settle for a 1-year deal, basically. So I think it's a perfect opportunity to bring somebody in who's already proven to work in your system, and it's a great opportunity for him to rehab his value.
I'm going to go with the Honey Badger, Tyrann Mathieu. He signed a 3-year deal worth $42 million, $26.8 guaranteed from the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, he's a 26-year-old safety who I believe has not reached his full potential. He helps bring speed to that area that needs a lot of help. And you know why? It's because the Chiefs' total defense was ranked 31st out of 32 teams last year. Their pass defense ranked 31st. Their run defense ranked 27th.
Whoa, hold on. The Chiefs' defense, pass defense ranked what?
31st.
Damn, did y'all just sign one of their corners?
Yes. Hey, man, he had his side on lockdown. I don't know what the other cornerback was doing, but Steven Nelson had his side on lockdown, okay? So you have to start somewhere based on the rankings. Tyrann Mathieu, a great start to it. And it's only 3 years. The last year of the deal, no guaranteed money. So essentially a 2-year deal. And if it doesn't work out, hey, you can cut ties after 2 years and not incur any dead cap money, basically, is what that no guaranteed money means. All right, JT, so let's transition to an exciting segment here, our NCAA tournament predictions. All right, let's put the football aside. We've spoken a lot about that. Let's get into college hoops. That's going to be the hot thing this week. The NCAA bracket has come out. So, JT, I want to start first with your final. Who you got?
I can't pick the Hurricanes.
They're not even in the NIB. Sorry.
Oh, damn. We that bad this year?
You haven't watched the game, so you
fire,
don't know.
Fire the coach. No, but my final fours are basically a group of usual suspects. So, I got Duke, North Carolina, and Gonzaga. But I got a shocker. I got UC Irvine in the final four.
What? Yeah. Wow. Can you even name one player on UC Irvine?
That's what makes them great.
They're the 72 Dolphins, the no-name defense.
Exactly.
All right, so I've got your final four. I've got Duke and UNC, and I've got Tennessee and Texas Tech rounding out my final.
Damn, you got Texas Tech going that far?
Yes, I do.
All right.
What about your championship game, and who do you have winning it all?
I think it's just going to be a rematch of a game we've already seen. I think it's going to be Duke versus North Carolina, and I think North Carolina gets the win. I just don't think Duke's not a good shooting team. If they make it this far, I think Carolina gets them again.
Either great minds think alike or we are way off, because I've got Duke UNC in the final with UNC winning it.
Nah, man, you just looking at my bracket, man. No,
I'm not listening to you when it comes to college basketball. I can tell you that. So now that we've got that out of the way, let's get to the real fun stuff with the NCAA tournament, right? Upsets in the first round, meaning the Thursday and Friday and or Friday games. Who do you have, JT, as the upsets?
I got a few. Obviously, I got UC Irvine winning their first game. They're the 13 seed. Kansas State's number 4. Definitely got them going really far. I'm going with my boys. I wish I could take them further, but obviously they're in a tough bracket. I got UCF beating VCU, so that's the 9 beating the 8. I think UCF's really talented. I just can't take them past Duke. And I got Murray State beating Marquette, so that's a 12 beating the 5 in the first round. And I got Buffalo, the 6th seed, losing in the first round as well. And I have, even though their seeding is not suggesting this upset, I do think Florida is considered the more talented team. I have Nevada beating them in the first round. And who else do I got? Let me see. I got Washington, number 9, beating Utah State, which is number 8. So those are my upsets in the early part of the tournament.
All right, so I see we're doing, as long as it's a lower seed, even if it's a 9, it's considered an upset. Okay, so let me get those ones out of the way. I have, yes, UCF, the 9 seed winning. I've got Washington, the 9 seed winning as well. Some other upsets, but still kind of big names. I have Oregon beating Wisconsin in the first round. That's a 12 seed over a 5. And then I have Seton Hall.
Is Bol Bol back?
Question. Good question. I don't know. I'm taking Oregon anyway.
All right, I see you.
And then Seton Hall, the seed over Wofford, which is a 7 seed. So I've got Seton Hall winning there. Now, some of my – I do Big East all the
you
way.
You love Big Seton East Hall.
Till I die. So with some of the bigger upsets, I've got UC Irvine as well. I think we both like that. So if you're listening to this show, don't take UC Irvine if both JT and I are agreeing on that. New Mexico State with a big upset over Auburn. That's a 12 over. And this one, hold on to your seat there, JT. Northeastern beating Kansas, a 13 over a 4 seed.
I could definitely feel you on that one. I'll tell you one upset that I don't know where it's going to happen, but recent history says it will. I just couldn't find a team strong enough to convince me to pick it. You know, usually in one of these tournaments, a 2 loses to a 15 recently, but I couldn't pick a part where it happens. But I wouldn't be surprised if that happens at least to 1-2 seed, they lose to a 15.
It seems like at least once a year, right? But we'll see. We'll see. Well, let's go a little bit further then with the upsets. Who do you have, one or two sleepers in there that you get to at least the sweet scene, meaning the second week of the tournament?
Well, obviously, I got to go with UC Irvine with the number 13 seed. I got them going to the Final Four. But also, I wanted to take this team further, 7 seed Nevada, just because on paper, this looks like a team that could make it to the Final Four. I just couldn't find the team that I liked less than them to take them to have take them further. But they got a lot of good players. I think they have the most wins in school history. So this just seems like one of those seasons where everything could break right for them and they probably could make some noise. I at least got them getting to the Sweet 16, but I wouldn't be surprised if they made it further.
I've got UC Irvine as well to the Sweet 16. I've got Louisville, who's a 7 seed. I've got them going to the Elite 8.
That ain't no sleeper, man. It's Louisville. Come on, man.
Bro, they're a 7 seed. They're going to have to beat Minnesota, which is very intriguing. Louisville, who was coached by Pitino at one point, the son of Rick Pitino, Richard Pitino, is coaching Minnesota. How ironic, huh?
Oh, they still do they still
the committee has a funny way of setting up matchups. Then Louisville would have to beat Michigan State, and then they'd have to go through probably LSU or Maryland or Belmont. So I think it's kind of a sleeper pick. And then my other one, Northeastern to the Sweet 16. So give me one or two players that people should keep an eye out for in terms of great performances or great players besides being named Zion Williams.
I would say John Morant from Murray State. I know a lot of people probably have heard about him at this point. I just think he's going to be good in the NBA. This is probably a chance where he's going to try to turn himself into a definite lottery pick. So as long as Murray State's in the tournament, I say enjoy the show and just watch this kid ball out.
Yeah, that's a good one. Before I give you real quick to our listeners, please watch the Marquette-Murray State game. Two great players, like JT said, John Morant and Marcus Howard, two of the top scorers in the NCAA, actually going against each other. That rarely happens in the NCAA tournament. My two guys, Jarrett Culver, the guard from Texas Tech, and get ready for this, JT. You're going to like this guy. From Northeastern, he's averaging 17.8 points a game. Vasa Pusacha.
Hey, you can't even spell that.
You like that?
You know it's not Vucevic, right? I think you misread that. You think that's him. That's not who it is.
It's Pusacha. Right? I got it right.
I'm pretty sure that's not how you said it. You're terrible at pronouncing
names. I went back and listened to how they said his name.
You could pronounce his name if his name was Johnson. Like, you're so bad at that. But I'll take your word for it for now.
I went back and listened to the game film. That's how they said his name.
All right. I'll give it to you.
All right. So, hey, listen. If you want, send us your brackets. You can either email it to us, john@gmail.com, or post it via social media pages so that we can see it. And if we get a good competition going, we'll figure out, JT and I will figure out a gift to the winner of the bracket, to the best bracket. We'll keep a running point total. It'll be like a small gift, all right? Nothing crazy. Don't expect anything crazy and big, all right? It's a very small gift. Because we don't have sponsors to the show yet. That's for example, our next segment, Quick Hitters. JT, do we have a sponsor yet? Quick Hitters, sponsored by, brought to you by.
I was going to say something really mean, but I don't think that's safe to work.
All right. So he didn't do his job. We still don't have a sponsor this week. So JT, let's go with the Quick Hitters, man.
All right. So first up, there's rumor out there that this story broke. So there's a former running back. Obviously, he wasn't that good for the Pittsburgh Steelers. His name is Josh Harris. He was an undrafted free agent in 2014. He's accusing Ben Roethlisberger of purposely fumbling during a game. So this is his quote. In 2014, week 17, we were playing the Bengals. Todd Haley, who was the offensive coordinator at the time for the Steelers, called a run play with very little time left in the game. Ben wanted to kneel. He rolled his eyes in the huddle, then purposely fumbles the ball. I had to recover it. At that moment, I knew what kind of person he was. You know what? I don't even have to say anything because you know how I feel about Ben Roethlisberger. This just proves he's a shitty leader, even more terrible guy. I'm done. Go ahead and say whatever you want.
I'm going to have some fun with this because this is ridiculous. All right. So let me say, I saw the video. I saw the play. Let me set the scene for everybody. December 19, 2014, like JT said, week 17 against the Bengals. The Steelers were up 27-17 with a minute and 9 seconds left. Haley calls a run play. If the Steelers score there, it looks like we're running up there anyway. The very next play after anyway, we took a knee. The Steelers took a knee. So Josh Harris, he's just mad. He finally got in the game and couldn't get the ball. All right? Because he was cut earlier than or later in early to the 2015 season. All right.
He probably got cut because he snitched on Ben for fumbling.
Plus, hey, who's not to blame Will Johnson if we're going down this route? Because technically Ben fumbled off of Will Johnson's arm. Because Will Johnson was upset that he thought he should have got his number called and not just who he has to block for. All
right? Yeah, you stay defending Ben Roethlisberger and defend him right to no playoffs. So the next quick hitter is apparently the Giants are no longer interested in Dwayne Haskins. So I know you say I don't have sources, but this is actually from ESPN's Diana Rossini. So she quotes, "About a week after the combine, I circled back with some people and asked, what do you think of Haskins? Do you guys like him? Do you think you are going for it with the number 6 pick? They responded, it was no. Actually, we are not doing any work on him. She said she went back and spoke to a few people and she paraphrased. They said he doesn't fit with us. So, Donato, how do you feel that we've already talked about the Giants, Eli's done, that they're not even looking at one of the top quarterbacks in this draft?
I mean, is this a surprise? It's not to me because what I outlined earlier in this episode is that the Giants are tanking for 2020 to draft either Tua or Justin Herbert. They just don't think Dwayne Haskins is their quarterback. And again, if they draft him, the whole exiting of Eli, the fans are going to want Haskins in there. They want Eli to get out gracefully. So I'm not surprised.
I can agree with you on some points. The only thing I'd push back on is, I mean, obviously, I think Haskins could be a really good NFL quarterback. I just don't think his ceiling might be as high as some of the other guys that they might have had the opportunity to get in the past. But I just don't understand how you don't find value in a position you need that's essentially the most important position in football at number 6. So they're never going to let the Giants forget if they pass on Haskins and he turns out to be a really good player. I think this is a big mistake. You got to take best available and best need.
All right. That's fair enough. Next topic. James Dolan, the owner of the
Knicks. Oh, he's such a clown.
Dude,
do we really have to talk about him?
Yes, we do. Be nice.
This dude is such a clown.
He has banned a specific fan from Madison Square Garden from attending any New York Knicks games over comments that the fan made to him as Dolan was exiting the basketball floor of Madison Square Garden after a Knicks game. Let's roll Let's run the audio clip on this so the fans can hear it, and then we'll comment on it.
Sell the team!
Anything I should sell the team? You want to not come to any more games?
Why?
Yeah, that's rude.
What's your opinion?
No, it's not an opinion. And you know what? Enjoy watching them on TV.
Is that really what he kicked the guy out of the arena for? Oh my God, this dude is so ridiculous. So I don't understand this. First of all, James Dolan is a sucker. Like, terrible at his job, just has no idea what he's doing. So I don't get this. So it's okay for fans to berate athletes strictly within the guidelines of, hey, your job is to play sports. Right now you suck at it. We have the right to tell you that you suck at your job, which I'm fine. If somebody's playing like crap, hey, as a fan, you can say that. So why, if James Dolan, who clearly sucks at his job, otherwise the fan wouldn't be bringing this up. If the fan says, hey, Dolan, you suck at your job, please help us out by selling the team and giving it to somebody else who's capable of running this organization. I don't understand what's, there should be nothing wrong with saying that. And then you ban the guy for life. This just proves how much of a clown he is, man. He did the same thing to Charles Oakley. I'm surprised they haven't beat his ass yet in New York.
It's a bad look, I think, for him as an owner and for the NBA. I mean, it was just a fan's opinion. He didn't say anything over the top that would be, you know, taken as aggressive language or foul language. And so I don't know why James Dolan overreacted. I think he overreacted because he thinks, or he knows, the fan is right in a way. Take so much abuse because he's not doing a good job. And listen, if you're doing a good job and people are criticizing you, you can take that because you just kind of, you know, brush it off your shoulder. But when it's actually true, that is when you get defensive. And that's what happened here. Because if the Knicks were winning titles, he'd laugh at this fan and just keep going on his day. He knows the fan is right because he knows they're underachieving, or they've underachieved as an organization for 20 years now, and a lot of it's on James Dolan.
One more final comment. I'll actually say this. This is how you know James Dolan hit an all-time low. I was listening to an interview that he did somewhere in New York recently, and they were asking him about, you know, the team and, you know, how he feels about the future. He literally had to read the names of the players off of a piece of paper, and they literally corrected him on the podcast, saying that, yes, these are the people that play for your team. Do you not know who they are? Yes, he needs to sell a team. He's terrible at his job. Moving on, I don't want to talk no more about him.
Hey, how come another podcast gets him on and you can't book any of the talents?
I turned them down, trust me. You don't want him on here because we'll be kicked off the airwaves.
You should have checked that with me first.
All right, so next one is, apparently there's a rumor going around, and it's actually gaining more legs now, that Jeannie Buss, who is in charge of the Lakers, strongly considered trading LeBron before the trade deadline this year. This comes from Rick Bucher of Bleacher Report. To paraphrase it, apparently she is furious with LeBron's camp, as Rich Paul was thought to have leaked to the public the Lakers' intentions to trade for Anthony Davis, which essentially tanked the whole deal. So, Donato, do you believe this is really true, that the Lakers would trade, or they considered trading LeBron in his first season during the NBA trade deadline?
Absolutely not.
What?
I mean, LeBron, listen, Magic would never let it happen. Neither would Rob Pelinka. And the real GM
LeVar
in the
Ball
first team right now.
Said they ain't running the show, though. LeVar Ball told you they ain't in charge.
I was going to say, well, that's why I was saying, the person who really runs the team and runs the show is LeBron himself. And there's no way he's gonna let himself be traded from the Lakers, because that would be seen as
LeBron, I would trade myself from the Lakers.
No, because it would be seen as a total failure, his time and his whole reason for going out there. Even though there's many reasons, it would just show that it was a failure and that he made the wrong move. He cannot let that happen. He needs the possible narrative.
I disagree with you. I do believe there's some truth to this. First of all, Let's not act like Jeannie Buss ain't a cold person. She fired her own brother. So you think she care about trading LeBron? Especially if he's...
She knows business, though. Good business is keeping LeBron.
Yeah, also good business is trying to win more games than we did last year. But if we have the same record, that's we're not improving. I think they consider trading LeBron from this standpoint. And Kevin Durant kind of alluded to this. And this is the narrative in the NBA that's slowly starting to gain more attention. Is that... it's a real possibility that they might not get another superstar to come in and play with LeBron because of the atmosphere around LeBron and the fact that other superstars just don't want to come and play with him. Durant already said the environment around him is toxic. He's not coming. Kawhi already said he's not coming. Paul George started this last year when he decided to stay in OKC instead of coming home to LA. So Anthony Davis really is the only person that has shown interest to play with LeBron. I'm not so sure if that's more of him just wanting to get the hell out of New Orleans. So I do think there's truth. I think they overestimated the drawing power of LeBron with other superstars coming to LA. I think it's looking like it's going to be very hard for them to get those players in there that they were counting on. So I definitely believe there's some truth that Jeannie Buss wanted to see, hey, what's the value we can get for trading LeBron? And I believe if they would have gotten a phenomenal deal, they would have traded him and taken it. So I definitely believe that would have happened.
Are you allowed to give your source on that one?
I did. It's Rick Bucher.
Bleacher Report. Oh, okay. Nice.
So you're
nice.
Not paying attention. I saw you talked about me last time saying I don't have any sources.
I was not paying attention. All right. So last rumor, the rumor mill, because that's what you love. That's your favorite part of the show. Josh Rosen to the Giants, possibly, JT, for the number 16th pick in the first round, which was the one the Giants got for OBJ. What do you think?
Yo, can I get this first?
Yes,
can
sir.
I get this
go
first?
Ahead.
No
go
more.
Ahead.
Yes, I believe this rumor is true because this is definitely a deal that Dave Gettleman would do. He would use that first round pick that he acquired from trading away one of the best players in team history for a guy who already proved in Arizona that if he does not have talent and good coaching around him, he is a bust. So you want to take him from Arizona and essentially put him in another position, almost identical to what he played in his rookie year and he struggled in, but you want to give up a first round pick for that guy. Yeah, go ahead and do that, Giants. I hope they do this. I hope they make this trade a first-round pick for Josh Rosen with no talent around him so they can fire Gettleman's ass and get him out of there.
Bro, most quarterbacks in the NFL that don't have talent around them and don't have an offensive-minded coach struggle. I don't care who it is. And Peyton Manning's rookie season, no one would have ever thought he was going to turn out to be this good. He threw a ton of picks for the Giants. They're getting guy that should have.
Yeah, but as bad as Peyton Manning was, he didn't look as bad as Rosen did.
But
Rosen looked like I was about to call Sam Bradford and look, man, you need to
get
in here.
But you cannot replace experience. Yes, Eli's been in the game 14, 15. Come on, man. Like, Rosen's been in it 1 year. Give him a chance. He's going to have Saquon. They've got a couple offensive weapons, Evan Ingram. They'll be okay if they get Josh Rosen. They'll finally have their quarterback in the future, which they should have got 2 years ago. So, JT, that is the conclusion of this special episode of JT and the Don, NFL Free Agency, and our NCAA predictions. Any last words?
Yeah, man. I just want the Dolphins to continue to stay out of free agency. We're doing a good job of not wasting money on sorry players that we're going to make worse. And 2020, tank for Tua, I'm with it.
All right. Well, enjoy the NCAA tournament games, the first and second round. Hopefully your bracket stays in one piece after the first weekend. And thank you for listening. Remember to follow us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at JT and the Don. Email us with your comments, tell us your brackets if you want, and any topics you want us to cover in the future, JT and the Don at gmail.com. And subscribe to us on Apple Tunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. Until the next episode.
Peace.